Welcome in to another edition of The Current Report, our weekly roundup of what's happening in the world of digital media. I'm your host, Chris Brooklier. We're back at the second part of our interview with former LA Times journalist Matt Pierce to break down Google blocking news in response to the California Journalism Preservation Act, which is a proposed bill in California that would force tech giants to pay news outlets a fee to carry links to news articles. But that's not all. There's a potential looming beast in the tech space that could have major implications for the future of journalism. Generative AI models scraping news articles. From chatbots writing articles, to going to somewhere like ChatGPT to do research, and even Google testing creating AI summaries within search so people Googling never have to leave the Google search page, the fallout could be massive. And it all could lead to fewer clicks onto news publishers' websites, meaning potentially less revenue coming in. So we launched into that topic right off the top with Matt. Here it is. As we were talking before, you were mentioning that this CJPA is not really a one thing that's going to save journalism, right? Especially against the behemoth like Google. But there was another part of it, you know, as if journalism isn't under enough of an existential threat. You know, you got generative AI coming in the wings. And there was a part from your op-ed that, you know, really stuck out to me. That was the part of the op-ed that stopped me in my tracks. So I kind of just want to read that bit and then get something next from you. You said, starting off with the quote, "Anybody hoping to shore up Google's still significant referral traffic to publishers or anyone who's propagandizing the idea of paying journalists is tantamount to a link tax is fighting yesterday's war. The old internet, where users actively hunt for information and prowl from site to site, is dying." Do you feel like you're already facing enough trouble with the big tech players? And now, on top of it, you have tech players like Google introducing new measures which are just going to make everything harder for journalists.
It's going to be a much more interventionist future for media. It's going to be one built on a vast amount of data mining. It's going to be powered by generative AI that has accumulated knowledge from all across the internet and is going to be producing outputs that appear in perhaps a single portal so that a user doesn't have to go anywhere, doesn't have to hunt for anything, never has to see a hyperlink that would take them away from that interface. And I think everything is driving toward that point. And so when we argue about bills like the California Journalism Preservation Act, people call it a link tax, you know, and how it would hurt the open web, I'm looking around here and I'm saying, and I'm looking at how I use my devices and how my friends use their devices. And I'm like, what open web? You know, like it's an information economy that's being rationalized to bring you as many ads as possible to encourage as much economic activity as possible. And that's been positive for a lot of people. It's been really bad for journalism because at the end of the day, nonetheless, despite all this innovation, there was no one else going to the courthouse to dig up those records. There's no one else chasing down an elusive source who doesn't want to talk publicly about what's going on a major story. There's less and less human judgment in our communities saying this is the major story of the day about City Hall. And our communities are suffering for that. And journalists do that work. And I think the nature of what journalism is going to look like is going to change under this incoming internet, the closed internet, the summary internet. And, you know, if we're still going to have these people out there doing this essential civic work, somebody's going to have to pay them.
And we're seeing major consequences when it comes to these big journalistic establishments, much like the one you worked out for 12 years, the LA Times, right? The LA Times has dropped 40% of its staff since 2019, even when you have this billionaire owner who was supposed to come in and kind of save the paper. What I guess I don't understand about these generative AI platforms is they're modeled off of previous work, right? And I think we saw this with the writer strike. But what happens when there's no more journalists, right? What happens when there's no more new work that they can model off of?
See, this is the part of the argument where, you know, everything I've said up until now has been rabble-rousing against Google. But I think there is a new bargain to be had. The old bargain of the open web, the old bargain of the hyperlink, you know, we would give the internet free or free-ish content in exchange for traffic. That deal is dying and seems to be a worse deal all the time. But the new deal could be something different, which is that We do have these massive firms that are engaging in these capital intensive projects to develop these large language models. You know, it takes a lot of energy, it needs a lot of IP. And not only that, you need like a massive amount of quality information to ground these models so they're not just hallucinating all the time, which they do. They're awful at finding facts. If you're in the fact business, this technology is basically unusable for the most part, unless you're using it in very narrow or creative and careful ways. To me, it seems as though there's a new value proposition here, which is that Google should pay its fair share for the work of journalism, even if only not out of charity, not because Google needs to like feel good about itself in the world or pretends that it's supporting journalism and pretends that it's doing all this philanthropically. Google needs quality information to continue grounding its AI models if it's going to have a successful AI development program in the future. You know, it's not going to be somebody like me who works for a labor union who's going to be like negotiating that kind of deal with Google. I'm just saying that I think there is an arrangement of mutual interest that should be made for journalists and AI developers in the future if we really are heading toward this future of, you know, all-in-one portals, this future of passive information consumption. They are nonetheless going to be very labor-intensive. Like, there's still going to need to be people out there bringing new facts into these data sets, producing high quality data still into the future, because generative AI is inevitably backwards looking, and ingesting the data of the past. We need like human beings who are still going to be performing the dirty work of bringing new information to the world.
You've mentioned the future of the open internet, right? There was a part in your op-ed where you said the dream of the open internet is fading. So what would be your ideal idea of the open internet? And then if we connect that to local newsrooms, how can newsrooms monetize, you know, in a successful way in the future?
Users should have more freedom to be able to have some choice in what they see, so it's not so algorithmically dominated. You know, and open protocols are very attractive as well. There's been a lot of good pushes in that direction. You know, it's very notable that like one of the few places in media where people are still trying to do some innovative work is newsletters, and that's based off of email, which is one of the original sort of open protocol types of transmitting information. So I do think there are infrastructural things that can be done to promote a less dystopian future. And then I'm also interested in projects like Signal too, where you just have quieter spaces of the internet that are not overseen by a few massive firms where people can communicate privately. Like, we obviously need to have a zone of privacy built around individuals so that they can explore for themselves what they actually want and what kind of people they are. One of my final pieces for the LA Times when I left was a review of Kyle Chayka's book, Filter World. And he was kind of warning about, separate from the almost the tech policy side of this question, you know, one of the impacts of the incoming internet, of the closed internet, is that by turning consumers into passive consumers of information, you're also making them into less interesting people. Like, there's something about the work of going and looking for information that is a creative spark and a formative spark for people and their formation of self and their ability to be independent and free human beings. That's what I mean when I talk about, like, you know, a bill like the California Journalism Preservation Act. Like, it's just the bill to make Google pay back some of the revenues that it's been making off of the labor of journalists. But like, this is only the beginning of what we need to be talking about in internet policy to build a more open, equitable, not based on free labor internet where people are paid for their work, but also people are able to explore and not always be, you know, sort of under a thumb of just a couple of companies, but also, you know, just on a very basic fundamental democratic level. Like, these companies are too big. They've become so big that they're able to exercise an extraordinary amount of power, not just over the media of tomorrow, but the media of today. Google and Meta already have been giving a ton of money to smaller publishers, and they become activated to act against the big publishers when legislation like this happens. I think that's a bad thing. I think it's a bad thing that Google's even in the position to be able to shut off access to journalism in a state because the legislature is saying, hey, we need to think about regulating you. So I think antitrust action has to be a necessary component of this as well.
All right. Well, I think this is a massive issue, but
it's the future.
you doing your small part to try to improve anything, right? Because it at some points I feel like it's too big of a problem to, you know, beat. But then if you don't put any effort into it, you're not going to beat it at all, right? So we need to make some effort, and I think you're a part of that. So it was good to chat with you.
Yeah, we just have to iterate. Just as any tech innovator at any startup is thinking of doing things in a new way, you start with one version of the idea and the idea doesn't work. And then you move on to the next version and learn from the failures of the past. I know people don't like talking about government that way. And obviously like these issues need to be undertaken with great care, but we have to start the conversation somewhere. And so I think we should start it here.
Next, we're capping off this episode with one last thing. In more massive news that has far-reaching consequences, Google announced it's delaying its plan to deprecate third-party cookies by the end of the year. Over the past several months, the UK's Competition and Markets Authority has been overseeing Google's transition away from cookies. The news was shared ahead of the CMA in Google's quarterly report. In a statement, Google said the delay comes because of two main reasons: the CMA being able to review evidence from industry tests and reconciling divergent feedback from regulators, developers, and the industry at large. This is the third time Google has pushed back its original deadline to deprecate cookies set in January 2020. The tech giant will move forward again with its plan to remove cookies early next year. And that's it for this edition of The Current Report. For a deeper dive on all these stories plus more, check out thecurrent.com. And of course, please like and subscribe on YouTube, plus leave us a review on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen. And if you want to hear more from The Current, listen to The Current Podcast, where we interview some of marketing's biggest leaders about their keystone career moments and where the industry is going next. We'll see you next week.